Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today.
Going on, you good humans. Welcome to a very, very fun episode of Good Humans Podcast. This is guest episode number 76 with a great friend of mine and fellow pro surfer, India Robinson. If it's your first time here today, a very warm welcome. Please do me a huge favor. Hit that follow and subscribe button. Leave us a five-star rating. It takes you about 10 seconds and does massive things for us to move up the ratings. Also, leave us a review over on Apple Podcast. And the best thing you can do is tag both myself and India. Share this on your Instagram story, the little tile from this episode. Let your friends know all about it because I know this episode can really help a lot of people. Another thing that can help a lot of people is our incredible sponsors, Drink Arepa. Arepa is a brain function drink. So this relates very well to today's episode because India had a brain injury. The product was actually developed by a neuroscientist, and the why behind Arepa is really special because Angus, the co-founder who I had on this podcast, went on to explain that he'd had some family history with brain function kind of things happening from Alzheimer's and dementia in his family. So because of this, he wanted to contribute to, making people's brains function better. So Drink Arepa is, a neuroscience-based brain drink. It tastes like black currant juice. It's delicious. It's got a New Zealand neuroberry in it. It also has L-theanine for calming the brain, but it's so, so good for brain focus short-term and performance, but also for your brain health long-term. So go over to their website. It is in the show notes, drinkarepa.com. Use the code GOODHUMAN and you get a massive 25% off. So they've got a range of products from powders to capsules to the drinks, which are my favorite. So go check them out. I love them. So does India. All right. Today's guest, India Robinson, has got a story that I was so unexpected of. I traveled the world with India back in 2021, both of us chasing the dream of qualifying for the World Surf League World Tour. India reached that goal. She crushed her year and did so well on the Challenger Series. But one thing I didn't know was she was carrying a post-concussion syndrome. She was carrying a really debilitating injury where she basically couldn't practice. She couldn't train. She was only going out the minimal amounts she could to go and compete. And other than that, she was, bedridden. Couldn't get any energy. And it was all because of a little head knock she received a few weeks before heading overseas. So the podcast is really interesting. She then went on to qualify for the World Tour and had another head knock, which, once again, put her out. She got told not to go and compete. She had to go against the doctor's will because as a pro surfer, this is every kid's dream, and she'd achieved it. To get told not to go and do it would have been way too big of a hard pill to swallow. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you get educated a bit about concussion in this episode. I think it's really important for young athletes and people who might potentially get head knocks to understand the information in this episode. India is an incredible person. I know you're going to love this episode. Like I said before, share it around. Let her know how much you love it. And let's jump straight into it. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, India Robinson.
How you going, India?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have a chat. We've spent quite a bit of time together over the years as pro surfers and have had such amazing experiences all around the world, but you've got a pretty unique story, and the last couple years have some massive ups, but also some very lows for you, which I'm excited to get to chat to you about. But to kick today's episode off, you're actually a great guest for Arepa. Arepa is our sponsor, and they're a brain function or a brain performance drink, and which we will get into later in your story. You've been dealing with some brain injuries, so let's have a little sip of Arepa to kick this one off. So it's developed by neuroscientists, millions of dollars of clinical studies. It's got a New Zealand neuroberry, and then it's got pine bark extract and L-theanine, which is like the calming stuff from green tea. Basically, it's like for brain performance, but also clarity. And yeah, it's got nothing bad in it. So cheers.
Keen to try it.
Yeah, let me know. You've got the fizzy one. I've got the non-fizzy one. So.
Oh my God. It tastes like a juice box from when I was a kid or something. It's so good.
It's delicious, but it's actually, really healthy and really good for you. So.
Oh my God.
Keep the brain fired up for the
little episode. That'll get me through it.
I'm gonna, as I told you before, I'm going to send you some of this too because I think it'll be good for your brain.
Yeah, I'll take that.
But sweet, let's get into your story. Actually, to start off, what I do ask all of my guests is, what are you grateful for right now?
I'm really grateful for my support crew. My family and friends. Just as of lately, I've really come to the conclusion that they've been the ones that have got me through the hard times and the good times, but I'm really grateful for them.
I love that. That's a nice one to be grateful for. So let's maybe kick off and you can tell the listener who you are and what you do.
I'm India Robinson, born and raised in Janjuk, Victoria. I am 22 years old now and I am a professional surfer.
Yes, a very good surfer at that. And the last couple of years have been amazing to watch her rise to the world tour and a whole bunch of things, which we will get into. But we're going to rewind back to the start. We want to get to know who you are, why you do what you do. And so let's rewind back to the start. Where'd you grow up? What was family life like? Siblings? And then, what was school like kind of up into your teen years?
I have come from a pretty big family. I've got three older brothers. And my dad was the one that got into surfing first, and then he pushed that onto my brothers. They loved it, and then naturally me seeing what my brothers are doing, I wanted to do everything they did. So whether that was footy, surfing, I just followed what they did. So naturally I just started surfing, and then they started competing, so I also wanted to do that as well. Throughout that process, it was also juggling all of the other sports I loved, which was netball, basketball, soccer, and just being a young kid at school, wanting to hang with my friends. And then I actually stopped surfing for a couple years from the age of, so I started at 3, and then at the age of 7, I really got into all of my dancing and soccer and stuff.
Interesting.
And then, I got back into it at, I think, 11. I was at a school surf competition. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, I want to do this and try and compete. And then that's when I started doing all of the Wahoo Grom comps and traveling to a few more events with my brothers and stuff. But it was a weird process to try and juggle what I was actually passionate about. And then it came down to do I want to go down the soccer route or do I want to go down the surfing route? And I'm really happy I chose the surfing route.
What do you think drew you to surfing rather than soccer and other sports?
I think the beach, just the atmosphere of being in the ocean all the time with my friends and just surfing, it's so enjoyable. Whereas soccer was you're training in the sun so much and you're running around, but you're not able to do that thing that you can do in the ocean. It's pretty special.
Yeah. I feel very similar. I grew up playing, rugby union and it was the same. I really enjoyed the competing part of the sport, but the training sucks. Whereas with surfing, the training, especially when you're a kid, is just going surfing. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a lot more incentive to be a surfer, I think, when you're younger, because you're like, wait, the training's epic. I just go surfing. It's obviously changing a bit now with the environment we're in. You're in with sort of the elite level, there is a lot more training behind the scenes other than just going surfing. But as a kid, it's I think I'll stop going to footy training and just go to the beach,
which
I think is a good choice. And with the career you've had, I think it's a very good choice for you. So what about school? What was school like for you in high school? I always find it very interesting, especially speaking to top level athletes, how they found school, because it usually goes one or the other way. So what was school like for you?
High school was pretty good. I had all of my friends that I was at primary school with came to the same high school, so it was a very easy transition for me. I only did high school up until year 9 at a private school, and then in year 9 that's when I was like, Mom, Dad, I'm so invested in this sport. I want to surf more. I want to be able to train more. I'm traveling too much. I'm falling behind. I want to be able to do this from wherever I am. So that's when it took a while and took a lot of convincing, but I convinced them to let me do distance education. So Really? Yeah, I did online school from year 9 to 11, finished year 11 and decided not to do year 12. School was always felt like an obligation for me and not so much something that I need, like art for me. I didn't feel like I needed it. All of the paths I want to take in life didn't really need the school aspect. I loved that I learned all of the basic stuff that you do from school, but yeah, furthering my education going into like year 12 just wasn't the route I wanted to take. So yeah, distance education allowed me to surf more, travel around the world more, and yeah, do the stuff that I was a bit more passionate about.
Yeah, interesting. So you were at what, 15, started doing distance education?
Yeah.
At that age in surfing, the competitions aren't still that big, because I kind of stayed at school because I knew that the events are a bit different, which was a bit different when I was kind of your age.
Yeah.
But at that age, what were the sort of events you were doing? Was you already doing the QS at that age? Because it's different. The whole environment for women surfing changed quite a lot. Oh, let's say 10 years ago, probably now, when girls like Tyler Wright and I mean, half of the girls now qualifying for tour are like 16, 17 years old. So yeah. You kind of, was that a big push for you in that direction, that you're like, wait, these girls are hitting their prime at 16, 17, whereas I'm going to be at school? Was that a driver for you?
Definitely. I think the big change was the year I wanted to start doing the pro juniors. They changed it from being 21 and under to then under 18. So I did my first ever 21 and under one and had pretty good success. And then I was like, whoa, like if it's changing, that means I have to adapt quicker. So then at 15, I started doing my first QSs just regionally around Australia, and then was doing the pro junior full time. And I was just, yeah, kind of chasing that age bracket that all of these younger girls were getting success by 17, and I was like, okay, well, if that's what I need to do, then I've got to start committing at a really young age as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when the WSL changed it to under 18, you used to, for when I was there, I got to finish school and then I could focus 3 years on the junior series. Yeah. And then progress to the QS, whereas once they changed it, it's like through your high school years is your prime. So I guess that distance education and taking a bit of a back step from school allowed you to have the success that you did have throughout your junior career. So
yeah,
let's talk about those junior years. How'd you go in the junior series? You competed against my little sister a fair bit.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It was a really cool experience. I was in a really talented age bracket. There were so many good girls around the same age as me, so it was always trying to one-up each other. Even from as young as 12 in the state rounds, I was going up against Piper and all of these really good girls. And then, yeah, the pro junior stage, I won my first ever. It was my first pro junior I went in. It was that 21 and under one. I went into it just to get a ranking for the next year and just see how I'd go. And, yeah, somehow ended up winning that one, and then went on to do it full time that next year. And that's when Macy was in her prime and was just annihilating us all, just winning every pro junior she went into. And so after that first year in the junior, I learnt so much and knew that I still had a lot to learn when it came to competing in like a more mature way.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of work with my coach Adam Robbo in Victoria, and that next year I started making more finals and winning a few more pro juniors, and then it went by really quickly. And then all of a sudden I was traveling around the world at a really young age, probably a bit too early, honestly, doing the QSs. I think I was 16 when I decided to go to Europe and try to get a ranking to get into
primes. Did you go with your brother those years?
Yeah. So my brother was doing them, and my mum went as well, and we were just like kind of tagging along.
Do you remember I came and stayed at your house like years ago? Yeah. I was just remembering that. I was like, when you were coming over just now, I was like,
yeah.
I remember I went and stayed at your guys' place for a couple of days for like when the Bells comp was on with Cody. Or was it, maybe it wasn't even when Bells was on.
I think it was. It was before Bells started.
It was before Bells or something. I came in, and your mum's a yoga teacher. Yes. I was like, yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You must have been.
I would have been
yeah,
tiny.
Yeah, you would have been tiny. Because that would have been when I was like 19, 20. Yeah. Your brother must have been 15. So you would have been like 10.
I would have been, like 10 or 11. Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Like crazy.
Wild. So you go to Europe with your brother and mom and do your first kind of stint international traveling.
Yeah. Spent a lot of money to lose first round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you sponsored back then?
Somewhat. I was with Roxy at the time, but a sticker funding on the board, not really funding. So
hard to come by.
Yeah.
The bloody surf industry is tricky, and it's I feel so hard. Yeah, which we're gonna get into how you funded your last sort of QS campaign, because it's so expensive to travel the world and the funding is just like so hard. And I think people forget that when they're like, oh, pro surfer traveling to Europe. It's like, no, this is a young girl who's probably working a job to be able to get enough money just to get to the next event. Mum and dad are helping out. It's like, it's not all like, you know what I mean? Travel the world, go surfing.
Yeah, it's stressful.
Yeah.
It's very stressful.
Definitely. So you did a year or two on the QS before COVID, because we'll talk about that period. But how were those first couple of years in the QS? What was that experience like for you?
It definitely knocked my confidence down quite a bit. I was just riding the highs of being really successful in the junior career, and I just thought it would be the same. Once I got to the QS, I was just going to go do the same thing. But all of the girls having a few more years being at that level, and they were just so competition savvy. They knew exactly how to get in my head and paddle around and hassle me, and I just wasn't ready for it. And the pressure of traveling at a young age, knowing that your parents are supporting it, you feel the pressure to get a result, to get that money back, to pay them back. And going into that next year, I didn't want to have the financial pressure on me. So that's when I decided to start making my own money and start working a bit more. And so then I didn't have that outside pressure. I still had a lot of internal pressure, but it wasn't something where it was like, oh, I need to get a result, otherwise I've wasted mum or dad's money.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm doing this for me because I want to. And if I'm going to do everything I can because it's my money now.
Yeah. And what were you doing for work?
I started coaching. Yeah. So I started coaching out of Surfing Australia a bit, making a bit of money there, and also nannying on the side. For a family in Pottsville. So I was just doing whatever I could to make a bit of coin.
Yeah. And I feel like people forget that to be a professional, especially with like professional surfing and that kind of level below the top level. I mean, even now you'll agree, like even on the top level, heaps of people don't even have sponsors. But once you start investing so much time into your work, it takes away from your time to be able to improve in your surfing. So it kind of creates an even bigger gap between the high paid surfers with profile and the others.
Yeah.
Makes it quite a difficult transition. But let's, before we get into your year qualifying, I want to talk about what happened sort of in your career once COVID hit, because that for me was something that definitely spent a big fork in my road when it came to my surf career.
Yeah.
What happened with you there?
I was honestly so excited when I was really, really close to the burnout stage. I got to the end of the year and it'd been a long year, lots of losses for me. 2019. Yeah, 2019, going into the last event of the year at Port Stephens, I lost in the third round and I hadn't made it out of the third round, I think, all year or something. So I was like, I'm so over this. Like, I lost that real fun side of surfing. So then I was like, then after that, I still kept competing going into that next year. We had Manly and Newcastle, lost first round at both. And I was like, hey, I've just got to try and change my mindset going into New Zealand. And then, they were like, no one can go to New Zealand. The borders are shutting. COVID's like real. And a week prior to that, we were like, nah, it's all just like, it's not real. Like, it's just the flu, whatever. And so we all got sent home and I was like, cool. Like, I'm glad. I don't think I could compete for a while. Like, I was really close to just being like, I can't do it. It's too much. And then I got home and I was like,
home down to Victoria.
I got home to Victoria and within like 2 weeks, I messaged my friend and I'm like, I think it's finally time to make the move. Like, we'd been talking about it for so long. Let's move up to the north coast of New South Wales and move to Pottsville. And she was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, if we can't work and do stuff here, like, let's do it. We've been wanting to do it for so long. So we grabbed our two best friends and we made the drive up to Pottsville, and we got out just before the Victorian border shut.
Wow.
So we were really lucky in that sense. And we had honestly probably the best year of our lives, just being able to, we were really fortunate as well, being on the northern New South Wales, that we didn't have to isolate as much and we didn't get lockdowns. Too. Yeah. So we got to surf and enjoy normal life pretty much. Yeah. So I just got into this rhythm. I was training every day, surfing every day, and I was having so much fun just living with my best friends. And then the 2020 year just changed my whole mindset on surfing, and I loved it again. So I was really grateful for that year.
Yeah. Wow. It's so cool to see how close you were to potentially burning out and maybe like not giving it up, but like having just a couple more years of going through the motions. But that COVID year kind of kicked back into gear to ignite that passion for surfing again. But something else that I really admire about you, and we've worked alongside each other at Surfing Australia with you while I was building the Good Human Factory, you're working with our great friend Michelle Mitchell and building Queen in Me. Do you want to tell us about that, how that came about and what that project is?
Yeah. So again, COVID year kind of allowed me time to work on my other passion, which is shining more of a spotlight on the women surfers and just how amazing and talented they are. So that's when I decided to create Queen in Me. Michelle Mitchell was like a huge help in that side of things. And when no one was allowed to travel and compete, I ran an online surf competition for the girls just to keep that little fire going, and they could see what others were doing and stuff when we're not actually able to travel and compete against each other in real life. So it started throughout COVID, and then the passion just kept growing, and I wanted to be more interactive with the girls. So I decided to start running the Queen in Me camps out of the High Performance Center. And they were a huge success. I was so impressed with how engaged the girls were, not just in the surfing side, but the other side of it, which is knowing your worth and, staying true to your values and stuff, which I think you talk about a lot, which is, again, helped me so much. And within like myself, and staying true to yourself is such a hard thing to do in our industry. And I think for girls especially, it's got an extra pressure on yourself to try and fit into the image that some of the brands are wanting you to be. I just want to provide a platform that can help educate them and inspire them to just be themselves authentically.
I love that. It's so special to know that you're trying to give back. And like you kind of touched on then, the surf industry is, I don't even know the word I want to use here. The surf industry is a bit tricky for a girl who isn't, not willing, but isn't trying to be the like bikini model girl. And I spoke to Laura Enover about this pretty early on this podcast, 50 episodes ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like it has changed a little bit maybe since when she got there. Girls like Carissa Moore, Tyler Wright, who aren't your like girly girls, have really shown that being a strong, fit, professional surfer is more important than the selling the bikini side of things. Have you felt that sort of pressure through your career, being a young female who wants to really dedicate yourself to the sport, but then there's also this flip side of having to try and sell bikinis?
100%. I think it's definitely slowly making a shift, and I'm glad it is, but it shouldn't be taking this long to do so. So it's definitely frustrating. And at a young age, I definitely felt the pressure to, I was with a brand that did not align with who I was, and what they were asking me to do just was so far from what I was about that, it came to the age of like 16. I was like, it's just not working. Like, why are they trying to make me do this instead of just supporting my like surfing? I'm getting results. Like, why aren't they offering me a contract? Because I'm getting better results than some of the other girls, maybe that they just look a bit better in a bikini or whatnot. So at a young age, again, Michelle helped me with doing my values. And as soon as I saw on paper what my values were, I was like, that brand is so far away from what I want to be aligned with. Mm. That's when I was like, okay, I got to rip the sticker off and just, even if it means I'm unsponsored for a while, at least I'm staying true to who I am and can actually do what I'm proud to do. So,
and what are your values, if you can off the top of your head?
Yeah. Humility, I like being humble and within everything I do. And then respect is a huge one, both for yourself and everyone around you. And then the last one would probably be trust. I like to have a very tight group and trust them with my life, really.
I love that.
Yeah.
So. And obviously, with other brands that mightn't have aligned that much, but it's so special to see you've built the Queen in Me to hopefully inspire a younger generation of girls to align with their values a bit more. It's obviously it's very similarly aligned with what I do with the Good Human Factory, just trying to encourage people to build the self-awareness and the self-value to realize that you're not your career. You're not just India Robinson the surfer or India Robinson the girl to sell bikinis for Roxy. You're India Robinson the pro surfer. You're India Robinson the respectful, humble, and trustworthy girl, not India Robinson just a pro surfer, which I think is really cool. And I think what you're doing with the young girls is really inspiring, and you should be really proud of it.
Yeah,
what's the future vision for Queen in Me?
Yeah, so the camps are going to start flowing again. As I went on tour, it was a bit hard to run them while I was away. But, as of next year, January, I've got another one going, and then make them more consistent. And then after that, hopefully I really enjoy what you do, which is able to travel around and show people your workshops and, show more people, which eventually I want to get to the stage where I can go see more girls, even if that's overseas and some of the countries that don't have access to a lot of things we do, and just further inspire that younger generation.
I love that. Let's real quickly elevate a pitch. If someone's listening and they've got a daughter or their girl is into surfing and they're looking at maybe coming to a camp, what does a Queen in Me camp entail? How long is it? What do you do?
Yeah, so it's a 3-day camp out of the High Performance Centre at Surfing Australia. And
Casuarina?
Northern New South Wales, yep. It's 3 days of surfing, trampoline, skate sessions, a lot of self-worth and value sessions, which is my favourite part. They get the most out of, I think. And, you stay overnight, catering's involved. You get to mesh with 18 other girls, which is really cool. And all filmed and
all levels,
above
beginner.
You've got to be able to paddle out, catch your own waves, but other than that, welcome to all.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to leave in the show notes a link to your camp, which is probably already full for January, but I'll leave it in there anyway. Thank for you. Anyone who wants to look into it and your website. But let's get into 2020 onwards then. You've had a bunch of ups, a bunch of downs, and we're going to talk about them right now. So 2021, we finally get the green light. We can go overseas and travel again. You make it on the Challenger Series. I was on that Challenger Series as well last year. What was different with your approach this year after you saying you had a few years of not really quite getting to the level that you wanted to, early round losses? What changed? What clicked?
Because
you qualified for anyone. we'll get into the journey, but you qualified for the tour in 2021. So what changed?
I think working on my headspace. Through that 2020 year, it also allowed me a lot of time to work with a few psychologists, both sport and just a normal psychologist. Jason Patchell has been amazing support for me, just changing the way I look at competing. And he also shined the light on, it's not the end. It's not the be all and end all. I've got this.
You're not just the surfer.
Yeah, exactly what you were saying. I've got this other passion of mine that I love doing, and surfing's amazing, competing's amazing. But if it does get taken away from me, then I've still got this other thing that's so special to me. So I think knowing that I had that was able to take a lot of the pressure off me, and also the financial side of things, not having that outside pressure and being able to fund it myself was also a big, big thing for me.
That's epic. So we get on that tour, we head overseas, First event's Huntington.
Yep.
How'd you go at Huntington?
Pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. So even before the before the Challenger Series even started, to qualify for it, we had to go through the regional series. And it was before the last event at Cabarita, I needed a result to qualify. Me too. Yeah, we both needed a result to qualify for the Challenger. And 8 weeks prior to that was my first concussion.
Okay.
Yeah. So 8 weeks before it, I was like getting pretty antsy. I was like, oh, I've like worked so hard and now I'm not going to be able to compete at Cabra and I'm not going to then be able to chase the Challenger Series. So fortunately enough, I used the 6 to 8 weeks to get as well as I could. And then I got the green light to compete in it. Just had to take it kind of
easy. So how did you have your first concussion, just quickly? So 8 weeks before that event at Cabra, how did you get concussed?
Really silly. I was just surfing at my home break at Pottsville and I pulled my leg rope. Sometimes like just pull your leg rope to bring your board back, but I was facing the other way and the nose was actually pointing to me. So as I pulled the leg rope, the nose came flying and it just hit me in the temple. I think when I've spoken to the specialist, if it had have hit me elsewhere, it wouldn't have been as severe, but because it got me in my temple and I didn't tell anyone, that's what really threw me out and prolonged the process.
Interesting. So when you say you didn't tell anyone, you just thought you just got a bump in the head and you kind of had a bit of a headache. What were those next stages to understanding the severity of a concussion? Because I feel like most people listening would just go, oh, yeah, you hear of concussions all the time, but yours has been an ongoing problem for you. So what was that next 6 weeks like?
It was tricky. So after the initial hit itself, I was like, oh, there's no blood. I feel dizzy and it hurts. Like, but there's no blood and I didn't get knocked out. So it mustn't be a concussion. That's what I associated a concussion with, was you have to be knocked out or there has to be blood or something. So, I did go in and I was like, oh yeah, headache, like not feeling too well, and just went straight to gym. I had to go to train. I was like, hey, it'll go away. It's a headache. And then I trained and did the same thing the next day. I went surfing and then I trained and then we were supposed to do some testing in the gym. And there was this one where we had to pull the bar really hard and I was like, I just feel so weak. Like they were like, whoa, like what's wrong? Like, do you have the flu? Like, what's wrong? I'm like, no, like I hit my head the other day and it's just not been the same since. I feel really off. And they were like, you've got to tell us these things. Like, if you've hit your head, we need to do a test and see if it's a concussion. And then, so then I went into the process of figuring out if it was concussion, which it was. They diagnosed me with a concussion. And they were like, oh, this is really bad. Like the first 3 days are really important. You're supposed to rest, not do anything. And then it's a lot quicker to heal. Uh-huh. Because I skipped those first 3 days and kept pushing
and surfed and trained again.
Put my brain through so much more stress. That's what prolonged it. And so I was then, I was honestly just bedridden in a dark room for 6 weeks. Like,
wow.
Walking felt so hard. It just felt like my body had given up. Like it felt demobilizing. Like I just felt paralyzed. Like I couldn't explain it, but the only thing I could do in a day was ride a bike for 20 minutes, which was to slowly start bringing oxygen to the brain and get the heart rate going and stuff. But after that, I'd drive 15 minutes to the center, have to take like a half an hour lay down. That was like a lot for me.
Just get tired.
I was so tired. And then I'd ride the bike for 20 minutes and then I'd have to take like an hour's break after. I was so tired and I was just so hard for me to comprehend that I was surfing 3 times a day and doing gym and playing footy, like doing so much.
Hit to the head of your board. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it was so confusing for me. I couldn't understand it.
Wow. So that was your first concussion. So you 6 weeks and you have this event coming up and you're starting to feel pretty good by the end of it.
Yeah.
And you have that event and as well, like you're not preparing for this event. Like it must be so tricky. And then you get a result there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the result I needed to qualify for the Challenger Series. So yeah.
And then we set on the plane, we go over to America. Not a great first result.
Yeah.
How's the head feeling once you get overseas and traveling and stuff?
Not good. Not good. The plane was really hard, like going on the plane for 15 hours and just the higher pressure and stuff was like really testing for me.
Did you get warnings from the doctors that that might be a bit of a...
Yeah, they did say that it could happen. And when I talked to a few other athletes that have had it, they said the same thing, like flying can be tricky. You'll get some weird pressures and you'll just feel, when you get off the plane as well, you'll feel really off balance and just a bit out of sorts. So I definitely felt that, and it took a while to start to feel somewhat normal. But yeah, I got, yeah, we, I had to manage the lead up to the event. I could only surf once a day, really, like twice was really pushing it. And you're
still getting really tired.
And I was still, yeah. So managing energy was, yeah, the hardest part.
Wow. So US Open, not that good of a result. Portugal, you did well?
Portugal, I was really clicking with that wave and yeah, I felt really comfortable. I got, I made a really silly mistake in my man on man heat. I think it was in the quarters or around before 16, quarters, maybe. Round. Yeah. I made a really silly mistake. I let the girl go a wave and she got the score. And I was like, damn it. Like, that was really silly of me. So then going into France, I was like, okay, there's only two events left. If I want to qualify, I've really got to knuckle down. So in France, I was like, okay, I've learned all of the mistakes from that event. I'm not making a mistake here. I'm going to do my best surfing and I'm just not making a mistake. And yeah, it worked.
How's the brain once you get to Europe? Starting to feel okay or still pretty?
No, it was in France. It was probably the best I had felt in a while. I think the girls I was with and just having the atmosphere we did at the events relieved a lot of stress for me. And I was really comfortable there. It's a really... like the place itself has a really good energy around it and the food's amazing. I felt really healthy in what I was eating. And so that made me feel good. And then, yeah, going into the water, I just had the really strong mindset. Like I was just, yeah, it was such a weird shift for me. I'd never felt it before, but I was just like, you're not beating me. Wow. I'm not losing. And so I just
and didn't until the final. So yeah, come away with a second in that event, which is huge for anyone listening. To put it into context, I've been doing these prime events, or what we used to call them, prime challenge series events, for I think 10 years. I probably would have done like 70 of them or maybe 80 of them, and I've never made it to a semi-final. You'd be able to attest that even being there for that long is like good, but I've done that many.
Yeah.
I think I had like five quarters and just never break the quarters.
It's so hard.
Yeah, it's very, that's why I like to get a second is a huge result.
Yeah.
And then that puts you in the top couple, which would have you in qualifying. And then Hawaii, what was Hawaii like for you? Because I know another brain injury before Hawaii. Yeah, let's talk about France. What happened between France and Hawaii?
Yeah, so after France, I decided to just go to Hawaii really early. One of my best friends lived on the other island of Kauai, and that's Gabby Bryan, so she's on tour as well. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to go hang out with her, have my birthday, spend Halloween over there, and then just spend time in Hawaii. It was my first ever trip. So I was like, I need to just put in the time, work with my shaper, John Pizel, and just really dial in. Like in my mind, I was like, okay, I've got a lot to do if I want to qualify. So I was really setting up for a really big preparation. And I think it was 2 weeks into my trip and probably 5 weeks out from Haleiwa starting, I was surfing backdoor and it was one of the onshore windy afternoons, and unlucky again, my board, after a wave, I popped up and my board swung around and got me in my left temple this time. And I instantly knew, I was like, oh no, this is the same feeling I had last time. And I kind of just like went up to my friend. I'm like, I don't feel good. Like my board's got me in my head. I think like we need to go in, you need to take me home. I'm not feeling good. And so then we went back to our place and I rang the physio at Surfing Oz, Paulie, and was like, cause he was managing a lot of my stuff, and was like, I just had another head knock. Like, I don't know what to do. I was freaking out because I was like, I can't be out for 6 weeks. I can't not be competing in Haleiwa. And he was like, okay, like he went through all the questionnaires. We did all the stuff, the SCAT-5 testing to see if it was a concussion. And I instantly knew it was. But yeah, he confirmed it. And then we went on a few calls with the doctors and they confirmed it as well. And this time I was like, hey, I'm not making the same mistake. I'm telling someone straight away. Yeah. These first 3 days, I'm going to just sit in dark room, do nothing again. And so that's what I did. But again, it was a really long process. Like it was 4 weeks of doing nothing but a 20-minute walk. I didn't have a bike, so I was doing a 20-minute walk. And that's all I did in a day was that and a bit of stretching. And yeah, so 4 weeks of that and going crazy because I'm...
No screens as well?
Yeah, very limited screens. And if I did look at a screen, it had to be a dark room and I had to wear the blue light glasses and stuff. And then, yeah, so 4 weeks in a dark room just pondering with my mind, thinking about qualification, just stressing that the fact that...
Did you need a result or were you...
Yeah, I needed a result. There was so many of us that were really close. There was only... Gabby was the only one that had confirmed her spot. So there was 5 other spots up for grabs and we all had such a mixed bag of results. Yeah. So I definitely needed another result and I knew that. So I was just constantly thinking about how much at an advantage that other girls are at because they're getting to spend 4 weeks surfing and training that I'm not able to. So I was getting really worked up with that and I had to, ring Botsy, my coach, and then talk to Jace, my psychologist, and just try to figure out how I'm going to get to the point where I'm able to paddle out and actually make a heat that I needed to make. So it was really, really tough 4 weeks.
And then let's talk about when Hallie Avey comes around. How you feel on the day of the comps about to run? It was pretty big too.
Yeah. So the first few days...
Which kind of plays into your favor. You surf good when the waves are big.
Yeah, I was honestly pretty happy. But with
a concussed mind, maybe a bit tricky.
Yeah. So I hadn't been able to surf that wave much at all. I think I'd surfed it 3 or 4 times in the lead up before surfing a heat out there. I'd watched it a bunch and studied it and learned as much as I could from the beach side. But surfing it, very different to watching it. So, I tried to learn as much as I could. And then that first day, it was really big and kind of bumpy when the boys had to surf. And then by the afternoon, it kind of cleaned up and still solid, but really clean. And I was just really excited to surf. I'd not surfed for so long that I was like, I don't have, like, I'd been surfing.
You just come off the best event, best result of your life, a second place in a huge event. So you're like, what a crazy roller coaster.
Yeah, just kind of running with the emotions. And I'd been having to surf in a helmet and I was just so excited to take it off so I could surf my heat. So I was like, I'm just excited to surf, catch waves and not wear my helmet and the waves are pumping. So let's go out there and like do that. So first heat, I had a pretty stacked heat as well. I had Lakey in my first heat and I think another Hawaiian girl maybe. And the first wave I took off on was a really fun wave. I was just like, this is sick. Like, I love these kind of conditions. And I was just able to open up and do a couple calves. And I ended up winning my first heat. And I was like, oh, that felt good. Like,
and how did you feel in the water? Was the concussion starting to settle a bit or you were still?
In the water, like in the heat, I wasn't thinking about it at all. Yeah. I was went into this zone adrenaline. Where, nothing could come in or out. I was just like, I'm catching waves and I'm surfing. So then I got through the first heat and then the second heat was another really stacked one with Molly was in it and it came down to the last few minutes and I needed a score. I was in third place and I needed a score to get back up into second. So there was like a minute to go and there was a set that came through and Molly was looking at it and she decided to paddle over the first one. So I went the first one and she went the second and I'd done a few turns and like I needed a 4.8 or something and I was sitting in the water waiting for my score. The hooter had gone. I got the score and I was just like ecstatic. I was like, I can't believe it. I made another heat. I'm like, okay, reset. Got to surf another heat in like a couple minutes, like a couple hours. So reset it and then went out and surfed my semis and then won that. And then I came in and that's when I found out I had qualified. I was like, you got to tell me now, like, have I qualified, guys? My brother was there and one of my best friends, Sophie McCulloch, and I was just like, tell me, like, have I done enough? And they were like, you need to focus on the final. Like, you got to go back out right now. I'm like, no.
Surely you knew you qualified.
Tell me if I've qualified. And they're like, yeah, okay, you've qualified. You've done enough. And I was like,
how'd you go in the final?
I got fourth in the final, yeah. Had a bit of a shock. But I was just out there like, we're on tour. Like, Chris was out there. Betty Lou just qualified as well. And like, looking at each other like, we've just done it. Like, we're on tour next year. This is crazy. So it was a really big roller coaster.
Oh, yeah. I was there for most of the thing with you and had no idea about all these concussion things. Like, it's crazy how unaware we are of people's reality, what they're going through so often.
Yeah.
Let's talk about first year on tour now.
Yeah.
The first time they've changed the World Surf League tour to having a mid-year, well, not the first time, but a reshuffle for the first time since a while that we've done a mid-year, or they've done a mid-year cutoff. Your first event of the year is on at Pipeline as well, which is also very scary. Talk us through that first 6 months on tour and talk us through, the carry-on from the concussion injury as well.
Yeah, so pretty much after Haleiwa, I went straight home to Victoria and went to see specialists and was like, hey, we need to get this sorted. Like, pipe's coming up really quick. I only had a couple weeks to try and get ready for that. And they were like, you're tripping if you think you're able to, like, go to Hawaii. Like, you're not allowed. We're saying now, like, we're giving you our clinical opinion to not compete in the Hawaiian events. Like, you can compete in the ones after that, but you need to, like, really focus on your recovery because you've already pushed it too far.
How's that to hear from a doctor when you and once again, for anyone listening, the biggest dream for any young surfer is to qualify for the world tour.
Yeah.
To get told by a doctor that you should not go and compete in the first two events of the year of your dream of, like, lots of money on the line, the one thing that we all dream to achieve. What's it like getting told by doctors that you shouldn't be going?
It was heartbreaking. And I was just like, no, I just finally achieved my dream after so many years of hard work. Like, I'm not missing out on this. Like, I don't care what it does to me, but you're not telling me that I can't go. Like, at the end of the day, it's my body that I can.
Yeah.
And I made that decision. So, they did warn me. They gave me lots of warnings about what could happen if I did push it. And I decided to disregard it because I don't regret it. Like, it was my first year on tour and it was a dream come true.
You might never get that opportunity.
Yeah. Again. So although it's given me a lot of long-term issues, it's also something that I'll hold close to my heart forever. So it was a really hard decision. I sat down with the whole Surfing Australia trying to figure out what to do. And then we came to the conclusion that I'd go to Hawaii a week or two out from Pipe, most likely not going to do that event. So in the lead up, I wasn't able to surf at all, really. I surfed for 20 minutes a day in a helmet, didn't go near Pipe, wasn't allowed at that stretch of the beach. I could only surf around Sunset where it was a bit safer for like shallower reefs and stuff. So I surfed around that area, and knowing I probably have to pull out of Pipe was something I went into the headspace of like, okay, just get ready for Sunset because I'm gonna have to pull out. And then it started getting closer to when Pipe was about to start. I'm like, am I seriously gonna miss out on the opportunity to surf in the first ever event at Pipe?
Yeah.
And then my mindset shifted again and I was like calling up everyone like, I have to do this. Like, are you kidding? Even I can't miss this.
And just sit and your shoulder and catch one or two.
So then they were giving me the whole medical rundown, whatnot. Like, what if you hit your head?
So what
like,
were you getting warned by the medical people that is could potentially happen if you come back too quickly from this second concussion?
They told me straight up that if you rush the process, then it will develop into post-concussion syndrome and you'll have long-lasting effects on your eyesight and the way your brain functions.
Wow.
So that kind of just went straight over my head. I'm like,
imagine how many people have had concussions that they weren't aware of and they've just got this brain like condition that they don't know.
Yeah. Like just people that are like, oh, I just feel a bit brain froggy or they just wouldn't know. Like I probably have had a few in my earlier stages of life, but again, it's just the like the awareness around it is so minimal, but it's starting to be opened up and talked about a lot more.
I'm sure so many people will learn from this conversation. So, yeah, they tell you don't do pipe. You do pipe. How'd you feel competing?
I was a wreck. I was in all sorts. Like, I knew that it was, I had to be very cautious when I was out there, and that's not the kind of athlete I am. I like to just go for it, and like having to put a barrier on my surfing and what waves I can go and how to surf the wave and stuff was really hard for me to adapt to. So going out for that first heat, the only reason I honestly was able to compete in pipe was because Steph got COVID, and I had Steph and Tyler in my first heat. And with the mid-year cut, I was like, I can actually get a result by paddling out and doing nothing because Steph's unable to compete. So I made the most of it and was like, if I'm not able to compete in other events, then I just make the most of making a third round because Steph's not here. Yeah. So that was an easy decision. The waves were small and I was like, let's just go out there and be a part of history, really.
Steph pulls out. You end up getting a third round there. Didn't really get to put in a best effort.
Yeah.
And then you go to Sunset. What's Sunset's a pretty strong event for your style of surfing. How'd you go there?
I got to the quarters at Sunset, so pretty good result. I definitely felt like I could have gone further. Just a few little mistakes in that quarterfinal heat, but in the lead up to it and in the heats prior, I felt really strong and comfortable out there. I was working with one of the local Hawaiian guys, Joel Centeo. And
how good's Joel?
Oh, he's such a legend.
I worked with him a lot when I was with
him. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. He's epic, hey?
He's the best.
He's a lord. And then, yeah, had the best boards under my feet that I just trusted. I picked it up and was like, oh, John, like, he's nailed it. This feels sick. Like, I'll just surf this in my heat. So I spent so much time out Sunset because I knew pipe was a write-off that I was like, whilst those girls are focusing on pipe, I'm going to focus on Sunset. And I fell in love with the wave and just the raw open ocean feel of it, and it has so much power behind it that I was like, this is like a really cool opportunity to showcase my style of surfing. And it worked out. I got a quarters, so I was stoked.
Nice. And then you come home, and how's the brain feeling at this stage after the Hawaii leg?
So after Hawaii, we went to
Portugal. Yeah.
So I went straight to Portugal and I was super tired and fatigued. Like, everything was starting to take a toll.
Anytime you tried to ramp it back up, it was
going back down. Okay. Yeah. So as soon as I pushed it past my threshold, which wasn't much at that stage, it would take me back a couple of days. And then my whole nervous system was shot. So even just traveling, I caught the flu and was in Portugal. I'm like, oh, I feel terrible. And then we're at a really cold beach break, so we had to wear thicker wetsuits, and wearing a really thick wetsuit with a helmet, I was like feeling really claustrophobic. So I was like, guys, like, I need to take the helmet off. They're like, nope, you're not allowed. Like, it's still, this wave's shallow and punchy and this and that. And then I was like, oh, I'm over it. And so then there was a few surfs where I was like, I'm just taking it off and just like, I'll play it safe, like, I'll be careful. But so it was hard to adjust to going from Hawaii, where I spent so much time at Sunset and learning the wave, to then jumping into Portugal, not being able to really surf that much, and the wave was always changing, and I was just so unprepared for it that I was like really scared to surf that event. I was so nervous and was just stressed that I didn't have that preparation. So I went into it just like, okay, I'm just gonna try and do my best. Like, I don't feel that comfortable, but I'm just gonna do what I have to do.
One thing I want to quickly touch on, are you talking about this in the meet, because you kept this pretty secret too?
Yeah.
Why? I want to say that, I mean, I'm gonna make a guess here that, actually, I'm not even going to make a guess. I'm going to let you. Was it because you didn't want to, like, show somewhat weakness to your competitors? Or was it, because I remember, like, watching a lot of those events, and now, once obviously this podcast and you've got some stories coming out about what's been happening, it was pretty private. Did many people know about this?
No, it was my close circle. Only my close circle knew what I was actually going through and how little I was able to surf and train, but I did want to keep it on the down low. At Pipe, I did have to let WSL know because I was going to have to pull out of the event. So they knew that I was suffering with a concussion at that stage. And
did they want to make a story out of it and chose not to? Or?
I told them to keep it private. When I pulled out of Pipe, I told, like, they just said, due to an injury. They didn't specify what it was, but there was a lot of people assuming that it was just because I was scared to surf Pipe, and I was getting really frustrated at that, seeing a couple memes and stuff. I'm like, no, like, it's a lot more than that. But I was just like, oh, I'm not ready to. I also didn't want to use it as an excuse. Like, my focus was on making the mid-year cut, and then once I made the mid-year cut, I was going to take the rest of the season off. So my focus was to just get to that point without having this affect the way people looked at me and my surfing and stuff. I wanted my surfing to do the talking, and I felt that it's such a hard thing for people to understand that if they don't get it, then they just think you're using it as an excuse. So I was, I was wanting to keep it really private and just try my best to push through it. And it also allowed me to try and stay in a zone where when I was in the rashi and competing, I wasn't thinking about my injury. I was just thinking about doing the job that I'm here to do and, like, getting it done. So it was a bit of both.
it's a real balancing act, because, I mean, telling people might have sort of taken that bit of heat off from people, like, making assumptions and creating stories in their own head. But, yeah, I mean, your decision to make, and props to you for what you did. Let's go to Bells now. Bells is your home event. Probably you would have surfed in it before, as well.
I haven't. Oh, no.
Okay, so
no.
Bells, getting to surf at home.
Yeah.
Against your heroes. How's the brain feeling there? Because you've got Bells and Margaret River to make heats to make that mid-year cut. How'd those two events go?
So going into Bells, I was feeling pretty comfortable because I was going home and I had my coach there, and I was just feeling really good about it. I just got quarters at Portugal as well, so I was sitting in a pretty good spot on the rankings. Obviously still knowing I had to get another result, and this being my biggest lifelong dream to compete at home at Bells in the Rip Curl Pro and not be board caddying or working at the event, but to be in the event as a pro surfer was one of, like, the top of the bucket list ticked off. So I was really stoked to just be going home and surfing in that event. But then the pressure definitely started to kick in. I was like, oh, I'm like the hometown hero, as they were saying. And I was like being like, oh, what if I'm not able to compete and, like, get the result they're all expecting from me. So there was a lot of that back and forth in my own head, like excitement to surf, but also scared of the pressure of failing. So once it started though, and I heard the song, when I heard Hell's Bells as I was walking down, I was like, oh my god, this is so cool. Like, I've been wanting this for so long. And then they called it on at Winky. It was like a smaller 2-3 foot day at Winky, and I was like, I've surfed so many days like this, like, this is just gonna be fun. And so, yeah, I got through my first heat and I was just over the moon because I had, like, my whole community there for me. And then going into the round three, I got matched up against Steph again. And I was like, okay, all right, I beat her at sunset. Like, she's going to be hard to beat out here, but, I mean, I know this wave, like, the back of my hand, I should do pretty well. And it was a really good heat. We went back and forth a lot. And then there was the change of the heat was she had priority and I was sitting underneath her, and I saw this wave coming that I knew was going to hit shallower on the reef. It was going to be a really good wave. And I, like, saw it, and she was still out further and looking out the back. And I just remember seeing the wave and got excited and, like, kicked. And as I kicked, she looked in and she saw me, and then she started paddling in and she took the wave off me, and I was like, oh my gosh, why did I do that? Like, that's the wave. And then she got a 7 on it. I'm like, that was the one. If I had have just been more subtle with my paddle, I would have had that wave and I would have won that heat. But it was a really cool experience to surf against her at home and have such a close heat with her. So yeah, it was a really tough loss. It really, really stung, but I was also proud of the effort I put in.
Absolutely. And then going to Margaret's, you need a result if you want to make this mid-year cut. What happened at Margie's?
Yeah. Going into Margie's.
Still barely surfing, just still, only surfing heats.
Yeah. So that's when my body started to actually wear down and I was getting a lot of injuries. Like my back was playing up, my knee was starting to niggle, and I just was starting to feel really fatigued. And I got over to Margie's and I hadn't put a heap of time in at Margie's, but again, the wave style suited me. So I was pretty comfortable with having to compete out there with not so much preparation. So I did everything that I could in the lead up whilst managing like my back injury and stuff. And then, yeah, the competition started and I was super nervous in my first heat. Got through that first heat again and then matched up with Steph again. Had Steph in the third round once again. And it was a heat that pretty much whoever won that heat out of us was making the mid-year cut. So if I had a one, she would have fallen off. If she went, then she ended up winning it. It was a really slow heat. I had a six, she had a seven, and then there was only one other wave and she had a four and I didn't have a backup. So it was like very, very tight again. And I came, as I was paddling in, I was like, oh my God, like that's it. That's done. Like,
wow. And isn't it crazy? The fork in the road. Steph goes on to win the world title this year. Yeah. She loses that heat. She was
not even on tour.
Crazy.
Super bizarre.
It's so crazy. So you fall off the tour. It's obviously quite disappointing. In the back of your head, you've probably still got not the excuse of your injury, but you underlyingly know that you didn't get to. I mean, you're not practicing. You're not doing what you've done preparation-wise for your whole career as a surfer on the first time you're on the top level.
Yeah.
So what was the process finishing the tour? Is it like, all right, time to recover? Because this, since then, there's been the challenges. There's been, the Challenger Series and whatnot, which you could have competed on that you've sat out this year.
Yeah.
How hard was it to make that decision and what's recovery been like since? What's the future looking like?
Yeah, I think after Margie's, when I lost that heat, I came in and it all just hit me. I was like, I just reached the highest level you can and achieved my dream, but wasn't able to surf at 100% and able to give it my all. It
sounds like you're barely able to surf at 50%.
Yeah, I was functioning probably at 50%. I wasn't at my best whatsoever. So that was the biggest kick in the guts was knowing I had so much more to give and I had some pretty good results, but just knowing how much better it would have been if I was at 100%. So that was really, really hard to come to terms with. And then, after Margie's, it was like, okay, you didn't make it. Go do the Challenger Series at Snapper. You've got like a week. I was like, how am I going to do that?
Yeah.
Like I was still
in a dark room.
Yeah. I was so fatigued. And then at Snapper, that's when I was hitting like breaking point mentally. I was like, I don't know what to do here, guys. Like, I am struggling so much. I don't know how I'm going to surf a heat. Like, it was so hard for me to get through that first half a year on tour. Like, at each event, I'm just fighting to get to the next one and fighting to get to the mid-year cut to then have a break. But now that I haven't made the mid-year cut, I can't take a break because I've got to do Snapper. So I was just trying to fight and push through as much as I could and lost first round at Snapper. And I came in and was like, I expected nothing less really. Like I just had nothing to give. My surfing felt horrible. Like I just wasn't all there. And then the next stop was Manly and it was in a week again. And I was like, I'm not giving up. Like if I want to be back on tour, I'm supposed to go to these events and do them. So in my head, I was like, if I'm supposed to do it, then I'll go do it. So I went down to Manly and I was getting ready for that event. My back again was just so thrown out. Everything was falling apart. And I'm like, why did I come here? Like, and so I paddled out for that first heat at Manly and was like, I can barely paddle. Like my body's really giving in on me. Like I was really, really struggling to get back out the back and I lost that fight. Like, you know, when you're in heat and you're starting to lose and you're like, oh,
you weren't feeling like you were in France where felt like, oh, no one's going to beat me.
I felt like everyone was going to beat me. Yeah. I was out there and I was like, if a wave comes through and I need a six, I don't know if I can get the six because my legs feel weak, my arms feel weak, I feel slow, and I came in from it just like, take me somewhere, anywhere away from here. Like, I need to go and I need to not compete. So I, I came back up home to Pottsville and went and sat down with my support crew and was like, I can't go to Bolido. Like, there's no way. I need so much help right now. And they were like, okay, let's figure out who the best person to see is. I started talking to Tyler and Owen about who they saw, and I was like, I need some support. So, they told me who they saw, which was Brett Jarros in Melbourne. So, I went straight away down to see him in Melbourne, and finally I had a lot more clarity around what was going on in my brain. Before that, the specialists had just been really kind of generic about what was going on. Like, oh, yeah, you've got a concussion. Like, your eyes aren't functioning properly. There's a few,
this
like,
is gonna problems. It's going to take
time. Yeah. But he was
different for a top-level athlete who's trying to get back.
Yeah, I need times, and how do I fix it? Tell me how I need to fix it and I'll do it. So when I saw him, we did so many tests, and the tests, you were actually able to see what was wrong. Like, when we did the eye and the vestibular stuff, you were able to look back and see how your eyes aren't tracking properly and that they're a bit shaky and all of these kind of things. I was like, this is so much more beneficial for me, knowing that it's not just in my head and I'm not making it up. There's actually something wrong with me here. So when I saw him and I got my diagnosis of so many dysfunctions in my brain, I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, and I feel better about that. I felt so bad because it makes more sense now. And he gave me a really strict rehab routine to do, and I was like, cool, I'm gonna do this. He said it's different for everyone, the rehab process. It can be 6 weeks for some, sometimes it can be 6 months. Unfortunately for me, I am having to take the longer road with mine, but it's slowly getting there.
Yeah, wow. So that's been 3 months probably since then. Well, we're in November recording this. Now,
so.
And that was in what, June? May. So 3-4 months.
Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, how are you feeling now? What's the future looking like for you? Yeah, obviously just focusing on your recovery this year. You'll be back on the regional tour next year. Or are you gonna try and sit that out and go straight to the Challenger next year?
So I've still got a bit of rehab to do.
How are you feeling now? Like, day to day, you're back to pretty close, or
still only surfing once a day and doing gym. So that's progress for me, being able to surf and do gym in the same day. Otherwise, before I was having to alternate and just choose what I wanted to do. So it's I'm able to do more, and I'm being able to handle a bit more in my day to day, still having to deal with a lot of vestibular and eye stuff. That's probably my biggest issue.
When you say eye stuff, what do you mean?
So the easiest way to explain it is there's like your right frontal lobe. When you're when you look at stuff, for me, reading's really, really hard. When you see stuff and you're trying to register the information, it gets sent to your brainstem. So the connection between the right frontal lobe to the brainstem, for me, it gets lost in transition. So when I'm reading and I see a word and the message tries to get sent down to then process what it is and understand it, because it's getting lost, I then have to jump back and try to figure out what it is. So it's a big strain on my eyes because they are having to work double time because the connection's lost. Wow. Yeah, so it's really fascinating when he explained that to me, because I was like, why am I getting so much pain and pressure behind my eyes? Like, doesn't make sense. And I'm like, that's not where I got hit. And he was like, no, it's like completely different. And when he explained it like that, I was like, that makes a lot more sense to me. So having to restrain from doing too much stuff like reading and writing or stuff like that. And then even loud noises, or if there's too much going on, that's a lot of process for a lot of stuff for me to process. I can't do it as quickly as the average human, so it just takes its toll on me, and then that's when the headaches and the pressure behind the eyes will kick in.
Interesting. And then what is he expecting you to make a full recovery, or is this going to be long term, or is it impossible to say?
it's really hard to say. He says like most people do recover from it. It's just how long it will take. There's definitely a chance that because I've had a few head knocks that the eyesight stuff and a few of those complications could stay around for a while. But he said as long as I don't have another one is the main one. If I don't have another head knock and just do all of my rehab stuff, then I should make a recovery.
What precautions are you taking surfing-wise? Because it's not something that we can really... Yeah.
Yeah, it's very hard to know if your board is just going to fly around and hit you in the head. So when it comes to surfing waves of higher consequence, that's when I wear my helmet. And then just I just find myself, if I do fall off a wave, just doing this. Yeah, like, or if I pop up, it's like just cover my surroundings because I don't want it coming anywhere near my head.
Yeah, wow. So what is your vision for the future now? What are you looking forward to? Obviously, only 22 still. You're very early in your career. You still have many, many years of your peak ahead of you, which I'm excited for. What's your future goals now?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to go back to Haleiwa in about a week's time to go test myself, see where I'm at physically and mentally, to see if I'm ready to compete again. So it'll be a good test to see where I'm at. Also,
will they give you a spot, WSL, if you want it?
Yeah. So I've got a spot at Haleiwa, and then I've also got a spot for the Challenger Series next year because they set a rule up for the top two people who didn't make the cut get an instant spot onto the Challenger.
Yeah.
So that's good.
But because you had to say not onto this year, they push it a year for you?
Yeah. Okay. So they've put me in for next year, which is a good thing. Like it means I have more time to recover and spend on that, and I don't have to chase the regional series. I'll still do a couple just to get back in the flow of it. But the main focus is going to be being as healthy and fit as possible for the Challenger next year and then qualify. Yeah.
Let's see it. I'm excited to watch the journey. Nah, next year's going to be fun to watch. I'm excited to watch you on the Queen and Me journey as well. I think hopefully a lot of young girl surfers have listened to this episode and been inspired not only by your journey but also by, the values that you try and hold and try and live by, because you've obviously been dealt some really tricky cards with the concussion stuff, which I'm fascinated by. I've been so educated today. It's something that I was so unaware of. Like, you'd hear about concussion when it came to, like, NFL and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But even like with Owen's one, I never really, because his was a bit different. Hey? His was like a shake rather than an actual impact. Yeah.
Which again, like I didn't even know there was different ones. It's not the hit itself that's it's the problem. It's the brain that gets knocked to the side and then bruised.
More with big wave surfing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's so much more to it that I want to learn a lot more about as well.
Hopefully I'm going to get a repper to send you a bunch of a repper, and hopefully the repper can help with the healing. I know they've got a bunch of research that goes into stuff that's good for the brain.
Yeah,
so
that's fascinating.
I'm going to get you a bunch of that sent. Sick, but it's been incredible getting to catch up and really learn your story, to be honest, because like I said, I was with you for months of the journey on the Challenger and had no idea. I remember when because we were training together at the HPC when you were going through the first concussion, and I remember you kind of mentioning it, but I was just like, oh, it's just 2 weeks out of the war, like 2 weeks of chilling. But now it's blown me away to understand a bit more about your story. And I'm really excited to watch you flourish hopefully over the next couple of years. You've obviously got the talent and made a mark on the tour at 30-40%. So let's see how you go once you get back to 100%. I'm really excited for it, but... yeah, thanks so much for jumping on. The last question I do finish Good Humans podcast with every single time is, what does being a good human mean to India Robinson?
I think showing respect and caring for everyone that you come into. I think what you preach is so special that you don't necessarily know what someone's going through. So just show them the respect and kindness that you'd want in return. And I think that would get some people, that would make their day if you, just say hi and how are you?
That's beautifully summed up. I couldn't have said it better myself, but thanks so much for jumping on. I guess last thing, where can anyone find you if they want to get in touch, whether it be for Queen and Me, whether it be to hear more about your story? Now's the time to plug everything.
Yeah.
I'll leave it all in the show notes as well, so it's easy, but wherever you want to direct people.
Sweet. I've got Instagram that's just _India Robinson, and then Queen and Me www.alzheimersclub.com.au. That's where you'll find all the information about the camps and stuff. So hopefully I'll see a couple of young girls there.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be seeing plenty of them. So yeah, I'm excited to watch the journey. Thank you so much for jumping on Good Humans. You're a very good human, and I appreciate sitting down and taking the time to have a chat. So
thank you, Cooper. That was so fun. Thank you.
Amazing.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.